Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm an accountant of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by our man in the Nuremberg land, Simon Maddox, and coming straight out of Bonn, stalwart producer Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hi, producer Simon. Hi, Simon.
Good evening.
Hey.
Very, very nice hey there from Simon. To say producer Simon is something of a dark horse on the podcast would surely be an understatement. After all, who else has been accused so often on this very podcast of being a spy, an international man of mystery, a true Renaissance man? For this reason, I'm generally unsurprised by the curious things producer Simon reveals in our WhatsApp group. I've come to assume it's some kind of code, for what I have no idea, but what the hell else am I supposed to think when our enigmatic producer drops things like this into the chat, and I quote, "I might have a story to tell on Tuesday. Got chased off some land by a farmer today." Okay, producer Simon, fess up. What's all this about farmers?
Okay, I think I need a bit of context for this one. So while not producing this podcast and a couple of others, I make a little boutique podcast myself, which examines the intersection of motorcycling and filmmaking. I have a little motorcycle here in Germany, and I frequently go exploring in the surrounds, which is often into the neighboring countries because they're not too far away from me here in Bonn. But anyway, we had some lovely weather on Sunday, and so I loaded my motorcycle up with a few cameras, as I'm wont to do, and headed out into the countryside. And the reason I do this is because I sort of dabble myself in a little bit of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for a spot, an isolated spot, where I could set up a camera beside the road and sort of drive by. It's a sort of very typical thing that you do in motorcycle filmmaking. And I found this perfect spot. It was just amazing. It was next to a curvy piece of road, so it presented some quite interesting visuals, I thought. There was safe turning areas, and even more importantly, there was like a park bench sitting beside the road and a little bit of an area with some sealed, like a sealed driveway. And I thought, oh, this looks like a public access walking area. Maybe this would be a good place to set up the camera. And so I did that, and I started doing some filming. And then after about an hour, this car turned up, and this guy, I presume a farmer, and what possibly was maybe his son and maybe his son's partner, jumped out of the car and came over to me and asked me what I was doing. And I, in my, this is all in German, so you can imagine it was pretty basic. And so I just explained, oh, you know, I was a filmmaker and I was making a film. And I could see he wasn't very happy. And he said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I've put my camera here in the grass. And admittedly, it was probably at that stage about 15 meters from the road into the field. And now this field was not like a field that was actively being used. It wasn't fenced off. There were no crops growing. It was just a bit of grass. And very close to this, what looked like a public area where you could go walking into the hills. And so I had assumed it was sort of like a public area or sort of just a general use area. It's quite hard for me as a New Zealander because in New Zealand, even in the countryside, private property tends to be quite obviously fenced off. So it's very easy to determine what's public land and what's private land typically in New Zealand. And if you wanted to do something on private land, it's also quite easy to find the owner of that land typically, because unlike in Germany where rural villages exist and rural houses often are clustered together, in New Zealand farms are, or farmhouses are quite spread out. And if you want to do something on someone's land, you look for the nearest house and bingo, you usually find the farmer, the people who own that piece of land quite easily. In Germany, that would just seem impossible to me because, you know, the houses are all clumped together and I'm buggered if I'm going to go around knocking on doors with my poor German asking for permission to put up my tripod in a field. And at this stage, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. And anyway, I asked, at least I think I asked in German, well, can I put my camera here? And he said, no. I said, oh, okay, And then he said something else. And then I said, oh, is this your land? I think I got that German right. I was pretty proud of being able to ask questions. I said, is this your land? He said, yeah. I said, oh, okay, sorry. And I thought very quickly, I'm not going to make a fuss about this because I simply don't have the German to deal with it. So I'll be very polite and just apologize and take everything away, which is exactly what I did. And he said twice to me something which I'm pretty sure because of the last word was gefragt or something. If you had asked, it would have been okay if you to do this. And I thought, yep, fine, understand. And packed up and went off on my way. But I have to say, I felt the whole thing was extremely petty. Now, sure, if it was that person's land, I'm sure he's well within his rights. But I just thought, as a New Zealander, I found this very frustrating because it wasn't obvious that it was a piece of private land. Everything pointed it to being actually a piece of public land or publicly accessible. Who knows? I'm not quite sure what the legal status of a piece of land like that is. But clearly, I have to believe him that it was his land, which is fine. But I just thought the whole thing was a bit petty. And I was trying to think, you know, if that happened in New Zealand, if someone turned up in New Zealand in a very rural situation, which this was, I imagine the farmer would be like really interested and be like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, you're making it. Oh, okay. You're making a film. Where are you from? Oh, because they could see that I was from Bonn and I actually captured them going around. When I went to get my camera, the camera was still rolling and I could see them going behind the bike and pointing and having a bit of a laugh at the number plate, which obviously says that I'm from Bonn. So clearly, you know, out of town. Not that this was too far away. This was in Rheinland-Pfalz, which is just down the road from where we are in NRW. But it sort of was quite a disappointing. The only silver lining was I did all that in German. I got away with it. That's all right. Mm. Well done, Simon. But it was kind of disappointing. And my overall impression was it just was unnecessarily petty. And I just thought, you know, I'm starting to find Europe a little bit hard work, to be honest. But tell me I'm wrong and that I was way out of line or that my – and I didn't moan or complain to him. I was very polite. I didn't express any frustration. I just like, okay, I'm not going to make any fuss. I'll just apologize and go on my way, which is what I did. But I was just like – I just felt he was kind of being a dick because he could be a dick.
Mm. Unnecessarily petty would have been an excellent name for this podcast. really would have worked. Probably better than Take Ace from Home.
Hey, come on. 247 now, it's too late.
Yeah, it's that ship has very much sailed.
It sailed a long time ago.
But yeah. You got every right to feel the way you do, Simon. Like I say, a person taking an opportunity for a little power trip is a fundamental part of this beautiful culture. And I understand coming from maybe a slightly more open-minded place such as New Zealand, it must feel like that guy was just being a dick for no valid reason because that does seem to be what was happening. Yeah,
I mean, he did say, I'm pretty sure twice he said, if you'd asked, it would not have been a problem. And I don't know, maybe I didn't say, oh, look, I'm an amateur filmmaker. Maybe he thought, you know, I was doing something which I might have been making money out of, which is, you know, and I would feel a bit aggrieved about that possibly as well if someone was exploiting my piece of land to make money. And I was thinking, well, maybe if I'd had the language skills to say, look, I'm just an amateur filmmaker, I'm not making any money out of this, it's just there's all these reasons why this particular place is quite good, but I fully respect your, you know, your view and your right to turn me away and I will go on my way. Like I say, I was very careful not to express any frustration because I, you know, there were three of them and there was one of me and I didn't know how difficult they wanted to make it. But but it left me feeling like, it was just a bit sad, I felt.
But I think you're right to feel that way because I think a lot of interactions with, when you're interacting across cultures and across languages, a lot of that can be incredibly unsatisfying. Even when you're good at it, it still can not be satisfying, even when you understand everything that's being said to you. You don't know how that interaction would have changed if you were maybe more fluent and that's not to throw any shade on you. I think what we tend to forget is how discombobulating, or even like how being an English native speaker makes others feel when they don't speak English. I find that is something that has an impact on people. And it might have no impact at all in this instance. I obviously wasn't there, but I do think there's something that happens where when you realize you can't communicate across that boundary that makes it. And for all we know, that what he was saying about having asked before was maybe a way of, I don't know, trying to salvage that. Maybe they felt just as embarrassed. I think what our tells,
possibly
cultural tells, are really hard. And I find that often German tells are the hardest. I don't know why Germans aren't the best poker players in the world, because I think sometimes when you speak to people that don't give away as much body language as English speakers do.
I think there's something to that, Nick. And that's why, you know, after a few days, I'm kind of like interested in the whole thing and thinking back. And I think you've hit on something there, because he said that thing to me twice. He said, "Wenn Sie," you know, blah, 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 you know, if you'd asked first. And he was kind of saying it in a gentle way. There was no shouting or yelling. But, you know, when I'd asked him, "Can I put my camera in?" he said, "No." He was very firm about that. And I said, "Yeah, order 9? He said, "No." I think he said "nie," like never. And he then did soften a little bit when he said that thing. And he said it to me twice. You know, if you'd asked first, probably would have been okay. And I just said, next time, and smiled and went on my way.
You never know, right? If you had this interaction in New Zealand or the UK or America, like, that would go the way you would want. But I do understand that instinct. I think it would go the same way in England, I suspect. I don't know. I mean, I don't come from a rural background in the way Simon does.
So. I've been chased off farms before for being a few meters off the public bridle way. Of course, in the UK, it's very normal on farmland to have a public pathway with a right of way, but the scope of that is limited to, like, you can't wander onto their property off the bridle way. And yeah, I've definitely had farmers threatening things and wave shotguns in the air. No one's ever fired, but yeah, it's definitely normal where I'm from. That angry farmers do not like people on their land.
And I've certainly encountered grumpy farmers in New Zealand, and, you know, suspicious, and people whose first instinct is not to be curious, it's not to be generous. So I don't want to say, "Oh, bloody hell, this just sums up Germany," because I think that would be incredibly unfair, because, as I say, I know this kind of thing can happen in New Zealand as well. And a lot of it is just frustration that I couldn't have explained more carefully in more detail. That, you know, I'm not trying to exploit his piece of land in any way.
I mean, to be fair to the New Zealand farmers as well, you can understand their suspicion. They won't have seen another living animal that wasn't a sheep for a couple of days.
There you go.
Come on. I have been watching a huge amount of Taskmaster New Zealand. So I've been having daily doses of Kiwi culture. I feel like I understand you people much better now. You're all weird and lovely. And kind.
Weird.
Yeah. But anyway, so you asked me earlier, Nick, were there pitchforks involved? No, nothing so dramatic.
No, I was far more interested to see if he said "Rund of von meinem Grundstück." That's what I wanted to hear.
No. Or if he did, I missed that. He was firm, but he was not aggressive.
I think about this a lot, because it's, and I'm sure Simon must do it as well, because it's both of our jobs, like, it's communications, like, deep down, and even to the grammar and the syntax that we're teaching, it's all about effective communication more than anything else. I think people misjudge their ability to judge other people, and I think it's even worse when it's cross cultures. I remember, I was speaking to my brother. This is like the kind of interaction you would like, the sort of difference in perceptions that you have when you don't live in a culture, or you don't see a culture, or you don't spend time in a culture, in a different culture, sorry, is like my brother's perception of kind of Germans. He'll give me advice about like I'll say, "Oh, I'm having this issue perhaps with work, or maybe I'm having this private issue," and they'll give advice, and it'll just have so little relevancy, not because it isn't good advice. It's great advice if you live in the UK, but it just misses the culture entirely. I remember one time he was like, "Oh, you just take out your colleagues and get pissed." And I couldn't explain to him how difficult it was to, like, you wouldn't go into your work and suggest, like, to your colleagues who, like, necessarily this that dynamic that you would in the UK, where you're like, "Oh, we'll just go out for a beer on Friday."
Yeah, straight after work, we're going to the pub together.
Totally just blow their minds, you know? Mm-hmm. You would be like, maybe we could organize dinner in like 2 months' time, but and certainly not on a Friday, Tuesday, and they're going to have one beer. And so it defeats the purpose of all the kind of that. And so you end up with that situation. And what it is to say is that instinctively you tend to bring your belief in, like, that look means this. I don't know, again, how often you come up against the German okay in conversations. And I've talked about it before, but it's something that just boils my piss. Because you try to have a conversation with some people, and it's maybe just they're not very good at small talk, or even if it's in English or in German, it always seems to happen the same way. Having a small talk conversation, they don't know what to say, and there's an awkward pause, and they just go, "Okay," but it's like not a conversation. There's no conversation coming from that, and it's because I don't know. British culture is maybe more acclimatized to just wittery small talk, and then German culture isn't, you know. So you can see how quickly you'll kind of fall into a trap, you know. And that affects how you judge communication or when communication fails.
But as I said, I did drive away thinking, "Oh, I did all that in German, huh?
Well, I've done that."
Excellent, perfect. That's
didn't understand everything, but, you know, we were able to communicate and get the message across either way.
It's the kind of situation that could easily, if you hadn't been able to do that, could have easily ended up with some bizarre thing like the police being called or some shit.
Absolutely. Who's this foreigner on our land with a camera? No. Exactly. Yeah.
He's filming us. He's a pervert.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to go with foreign spy.
And
they'd
only just met you, and they just knew. They just knew.
But, like, imagine 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I first moved, people were, like, contacting Google to have their houses erased from Google Maps and stuff like that, and from Google Street View. Like, it's not without the realms of possibility. Remember that I'm not sure if, Simon, you were back on the show at that point last summer or 2 summers ago, where I stayed in a village, in some tiny little Bavarian village, and they turned the Wi-Fi off at 10 o'clock so everyone could, quote, get a good night's sleep. And you just say, why? We were racing to finish the podcast, if I'm right in thinking. I had a podcast that would get it done before 10 o'clock otherwise. Fucking curtains.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it's probably medically protected under the lovely German healthcare system that Wi-Fi is dangerous for you, and you need to make sure that you can not be exposed to any sort of harmful rays. You need to make sure you pack your safety rocks and your wonderful thing of quark, just in case you start to feel a bit heady.
I thought quark was for like some like leg injuries and stuff.
Oh,
like
it's
that.
For everything, Nick. Come on. Headache, rub it on your forehead. Knee ache, rub it on your knee. Hemorrhoids, shove it up your eyes.
It's so funny that, like, sort of 25% of German healthcare is just made up with, like, some kind of, like, witch doctor, you know? It's basically a druid with some mistletoe going, "Take this magic potion and it'll make you super strong." Well, it's like Asterix and Obelix, but it's all fucking snake oil, honestly.
I mean, England's only has a slightly more modern version of that. And all my life, at least as a young man, it was always just have a glass of orange squash and a paracetamol. that will fix every ailment you could possibly have.
Cup of tea.
God, no. When I was a kid, it was all about inhalations. We just like, you better have an inhalation.
An inhalation of what?
Just usually... God, what's it? Eucalyptus oil. So eucalyptus oil in hot water, and then you put your head over the bowl and put a towel over the top, and you just breathe it in through your nose. Actually works quite well at clearing things up.
Big fan when I got a cold. Love that. It's invigorating.
Here's something. I've been through enough cold and flu seasons over the last like 5 years with the kids and that to know that, like, when I was a kid, if you had a cough and a cold and a stuffed up nose, out came the Vicks vapor rub. Or if it was really bad, boiling water, Vicks vapor rub and some boiling water in a bowl, and you put a towel over your head and you just inhale.
Eucalyptus oil is much better than vapor rub water.
You've never always seen that in Germany, like? I've never seen
it. We've got vapor rub. It's Vapor rub is what they call it here.
Yeah, I've been asking for it wrong.
Vapor rub. Yeah. But yeah, we're a Vaporub household. The wife and I, whenever we're feeling a little bit sniffly, Vaporub, ready for a good night's sleep. It almost stops me snoring sometimes.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a tricky one. What about the Apotheca Susikite? That's something I've encountered, like medical, basically medical suites.
Yeah, they're awful, most of them, aren't they?
We got a packet of, I don't know, we're picking something like absolutely innocuous up from the Apotheca. And because the kids were with us, they gave us a packet of like jelly gummies. And this is like the world, like the land of Haribo, right? Or even just Trolley in Firth, right? This is a country that makes gummies. And honestly, these things were fucking worst. And I'm like, who is selling this shit? Like, it was like the worst packet of gummies I've ever had. How you made gummy bears? Bad. Like, it tasted like they were made of medicine. Terrible.
I mean, it sounds like great supply chain management, doesn't it? The Haribo, when they've completely fucked it up, right, small packets and send them to pharmacies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Then we'll get rid of this.
But it was like, and the desire to put Waldmeister. Waldmeister, that's it. To put Waldmeister in literally every product. Every product has Waldmeister in it. Any product you can imagine is...
Yeah, I think this is the only country where you can buy Waldmeister syrup for the soda stream. I don't think anyone else is getting that product.
It's kind of like Americans and root beer, though. Like, Americans love root beer, and you taste it, you're like, well, this is mouthwash. And same with Waldmeister, and you're like, well, this is mouthwash. But, like, people will swear by it, you know? People go to bars and drink it, and you just be, I've got to take my hat off to them, really. It's something that I don't think there is a British equivalent. There's an American equivalent, but not a British. Dandelion and burdock, maybe.
That's quite a specific one. Yeah, I mean, I'm on a bit of a ginger beer kick at the moment.
Good shout. Yeah,
that might be a bit of an equivalent.
Are you making it yourself?
No.
Why aren't you a trad wife? Be a trad wife.
Oh, yeah. So basically, when we were in our wellness escape, because I can't drink alcohol and the wife would order a cocktail, I'm like, I'm going to have something a little bit exotic. And I had a ginger beer, and it was one made by a company in Würzburg. Tried it. It was genuinely like a 9 out of 10 drink. It was magnificent. Googled it immediately to find out where I can buy it. I could buy it in Würzburg. We were going past that. Regensburg, sorry, not Würzburg. And I looked at the price. I'm like, I can't afford this drink. Like, this is unaffordably expensive. So I found an alternative, which Raver sells. Yeah. It's okay. Not as good. But then we had some friends over for a barbecue on the weekend. And Yana, my wife, picked up some drinks at Aldi. I didn't even look at them. They were just bio lemonades. And one was in the fridge. I was like, I'll try that. Open it up. And it was like, oh my God, this is the best ginger beer I've ever had. But it's called ginger beer. It's an apple juice with lemon and ginger in it, but carbonated. And it's a problem. I've already gone through five bottles, just little ones, the five of them. And I literally went to two different Aldis yesterday to clear out the stock. So I've got quite a lot of that now in my fridge.
I've fallen back in love with like Lidl, and I've always kind of had a fondness for Aldi, certainly in the UK. But honestly, man, like, I know, I've been shopping in Edeka and Riva like a fucking chump.
Like
years.
A middle-class prince.
It just felt like every week my shopping was getting €15 more expensive. And I was just like, this is insane. But I'm pure big up the Lidl. I do enjoy really everything we get from there. I'm like, yeah, this is solid. There's nothing to complain about. I love the fact that they like to rip off major brands. And just go, we'll make that. It's the same thing. Yeah.
Often from the same producer in many cases. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I'm Aldi sued ride or die now. There's a couple of products I love at Raver. Like I tried a Parmesan salad dressing they do there at Raver, the best of all. Oh, it is good. And I tell you what, it goes an absolute treat in a chicken and rocket sandwich. Mm. Oh, it's good.
I'm going to the UK tomorrow. And I was talking to someone I'm meeting next weekend about like where should we get drinks and where should we get beers to like, we need to stock up on some beers. And I was just like, oh yeah, Aldi. Aldi's obvious. And they're like, oh, what? But yeah, they don't have any brands. And I'm like, yeah, but what they do have is like German beer. And what they do have is like affordable beer, because beer prices in the UK are absolutely insane. So again, even when I'm in the UK, I'm like, where's my German standard? There we go. Just around the corner. Well, they do have as well, which I don't know many other places that still do it. Those shitty little French stubby beers.
Bit blonde.
Yeah, perfect for camping because they keep you like nicely buzzed, but never get you that pissed. So you just like a little
stay hydrated.
Cheeky French beer every so often. Exactly.
I love a bit of one.
Yeah, I'm going to get a couple of those. I just remembered those.
What you got to do for your cosplay buddies is to pick up some
Nambo. Not fucking cosplay. Got a whole podcast about this shit. Listen to the damn podcast. You
hate
this.
What's the name
bastard
of the podcast? Come on, plug it. I'm setting you up for a plug.
I know. I am going.
Just baited you so hard. Jesus
super,
Christ.
Super aggressive movements. Yeah. No, the podcast, if you haven't heard about it, is called Reenact This. And it is a podcast about reenactments and reenactors.
So, actually, what's the difference between cosplay and reenactments then?
Uh-oh.
I mean, I don't know. All I can tell you is, like, I mean, cosplay is its own thing. It's like they have their own conventions and you're generally getting dressed up as, like, I guess, as, like, superheroes and comic book characters and film characters and stuff. Then you have LARPing, which is live-action roleplay, which is more like D&D. Because I think you've got like dice rolls, or I don't know how it works, but there's definitely like a game, an actual in-game element to the way you do it. And then there's what we do, which is battle reenactments.
Which is historically accurate?
To as best as we can manage it. I mean, that's the aim. The aim of the society is to be as historically accurate as humanly possible, given the confines of... And that means loads of different things from like the clothing to the weapons to the tents and stuff like that.
So is there a like on-field punishment if someone is found to be wearing like a Casio digital watch?
Oh god, like no, you honestly, the fear of like the fear of god they put into you for that shit, like because that's the like antithesis of what you want. You don't want anyone rocking up with like some shitty Nike trainers that have been blacked out or something, you know?
90s.
Like the closest you'll get is someone like the most you'll get is someone will be wearing sand boots that have been cut to look like authentic shoes because they're new and they don't have proper shoes, or maybe a belt here and there might be a little bit erroneous. You can't be off site with anything that looks inauthentic. That's the fear, is that people think, well, people think we're a bunch of twats anyway, but fuck them, they don't know the fun of it. And so the aim is to kind of educate people that we're just, it's a hobby and it's fun, and but also the whole point is to not look like some people in a kind of cotton outfit and a ruff hitting some plastic swords together. Oh, I want a ruff now.
there is no like official recognition of respect for cosplaying or any of that, or LARPing really, in the UK. But the Sealed Knot, which you're involved with, is something that is referenced by the great and good of English historical culture.
Usually taken the utter piss.
No, but I'm like, not. I'm genuinely...
No. But like when you hear it, like usually it's like in a kind of mocking kind of way. Not what you're saying, but what like we were talking about that podcast that were mentioned on when they were doing it. They're talking about the English Civil War and stuff like that. I mean, I think there's a place for everything. There's people who do like lots of different reenactments. There's people I know who do the Sealed Knot, but they also do like Napoleonic War stuff as well. But like there's people who like to do cosplay. There's people who do a lot of Terry Pratchett cosplay, unsurprisingly. there's a cross section of people who like to dress up as 17th century people, and also people who like Terry Pratchett. They go hand in hand. So it's kind of funny in that respect. I think it just bleeds into it. Like, more dress up, please. Can we have more? But we were discussing it this weekend because they were meant to do a Highland Games. That was the idea. They're going to do this Highland Games after the battle or something to celebrate someone's birthday. But that someone has weirdly decided to book a holiday, so they're not coming. So the Highland Games was cancelled. And then someone's like, well, do you want to do cocktails and we'll wear clothes that we don't get to usually wear? They do that quite often where it's like, it's kind of dress up inception. Like, we've come to this place to reenact a battle and wear 17th century clothing, but while we're also doing that, we're going to have a party that involves fancy dress. So, like, you're just like, when does it end? Like, what happens? What is the point where we stop having to bring multiple costumes?
It really sounds like you're all running away from a lot.
I mean, probably, you know, but I mean, we're doing it in the most fun way possible.
I just don't want to be myself in a field.
I hate who I am. I need to be somebody else. I guess there's an element of that. And those people are usually the ones we call the officers. Everyone else is just keenly paying attention. The healthy disrespect people in charge, I guess.
I mean, fair play to you. What's the forecast like? Are you going to be knee deep in mud, or is it going to be
lots of
rednecks?
I mean,
are you allowed sunscreen on pitch?
Oh yeah, of course, man. Like, okay. I'm not here to punish anybody by avoiding the modern safety standards. It's going to be all right. Looks like it's going to be kind of sunny, sort of cloudy and sunny, 22, 24, 22, 21. That's pretty good. Mm. I'll take it.
It's going to be hot in heavyweight 17th century garb.
Any hotter than that, and it's going to be just not nice. But you want it to kind of be a bit cloudy when the battle's on, and then the sun comes out when you start getting pissed.
When victory comes, when God smiles upon us.
Even when we've lost, somebody's cracking open the beers, when the bottles of port are rolling round and everybody's feeling nicely relaxed, shall we say. That's what you want in the evening.
Is port historically accurate? Were they drinking that in the 1700s?
When we're on the campsite, it's just a normal campsite. It's just a... Mm-hmm. Like you would find at a festival, except we tend to tidy up after ourselves a bit better.
Oh, well, that's a dig at Glastonbury.
Fucking is, though, dude. Have you seen the state of that place? Because most regiments have also organized these events. We've all walked through fields that are meant to be for like animal farming and had to pick up cigarette butts. Like, I remember doing that several times where you, because you're camping on a farmer's field, you can't just go, oh, here's your field pack. Oh, by the way, loads of people were smoking and your sheep are all going to be like choking on cigarette butts for the next night. All your lamb's going to taste like tabs. You can't do that. So the kind of direction of travel is to be as conscientious as possible.
I assume you've asked the farmer if you can do this on the land, you know.
Well, we're not asking any German farmers. They might tell us no. No, everything is definitely in advance been organized, thankfully. Otherwise, we'd be facing something similar to what you were dealing with a couple of days ago. That brings us to the end of the show. Get off my land!
Get off my land!
If you enjoyed the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. The podcast has accounts on Blue Sky and Instagram, so feel free to follow us on your social media channel of choice. Just search for Decades From Home to find us. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or you'd like to send us an audio file for our final episode, reach out via any of our social media channels or get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%german.com, where weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss.
Tschüss. Bye, Matai. T-3.